Podcast, I'm going to share with you some special stories to do with my experience of silicon semiconductors. Now, people may say, well, that's just a boring component, but for me, it's anything but. And as a teacher, you dream of being able to include it in the way that you teach. And yeah, for sure, things, if you plot a VI curve, a current at different voltages curve, you see spectacular curves and shapes and wiggles when you do with diodes and the actual symbols and all that type of stuff. Now, this is Peter Hill Explains, and I promised in this one that I'd give a few more personal experiences. And how can you possibly have a personal experience? Well, the first sort of experience I want to do goes back to 1998-ish. I had a six-year-old. Possibly 6-year-olds running around at the Christmas evening pageant, Christmas carols pageant. It's the nativity, they do the nativity scene and various things. They had live camels. This time there was a Christian group which used to be on the local oval up at Glenbrook, and they'd go in front of the toilet block there. The angels would stand on top of the actual toilet block and would sing and dance, and there'd be this fire and brimstone teacher, and then they'd latch onto any cause to raise money. They had a big screen, a TV screen, a very broad, crude TV screen that used to rent and have a local TV celebrity that they'd hunt down and hunt down in the park and get him to say an announcement for free to everyone. For some reason, there's lots of odd things. Various camels, people going around with towels on their heads, and you'd see your kids go to the local concert. So my child must have been 8 or something like that. My oldest child. But what used to happen is they used to sell little glow sticks, which are thrown up into the air, and little LED candles and stuff. There wasn't anything very spectacular. But then I saw a little girl run past with a glowing star wand, and it flashed red, orange, and blue. And I suddenly saw it. And I shouted out, "A blue LED! A blue LED! They've discovered a blue LED!" And I began very excited, and I grabbed people. I said, "This is fantastic!" And of course, being a Christian revival thing, they thought I'd discovered God. But I was saying, but when they calmed me down and stuff like that, I said, "We've been struggling for years to get a blue LED, and it's suddenly been found." And for me, that was like a miracle coming down. So let's go back a few years before. Let me see, 8 years before, at the when I was doing my PhD, you would just talk to people who in that area, and they would say, "Oh, look, biggest thing we can possibly build. I don't think we can do it. I think it's technically impossible. Is a blue LED." So a blue LED required, not just silicon. You couldn't do it with silicon. You had to find a new material, and it had to have something called a band gap, and it's sufficiently big and sufficiently pure to produce blue light, because you could get a good band gap, but silicon being rather, or the materials being rather sneaky, that can work out ways not to produce the blue light. So lots of thoughts, and so I'd come into someone and be talking, and they'd have zinc and sulfur, and they were trying to make up their own crystals. And so, in general, there was this interest in blue LEDs, and a general law all around the science community that was something to do, some fantastic thing to achieve, and the world would change because of it. And if you got it, you'd definitely get a Nobel Prize. It's just the most exciting thing to possibly do. This is in the early 90s. Everyone was thinking about blue LEDs. And so having had that story, that belief that, you know, there's going to be some fantastic time in the future, it's hundreds of years in the future, in my Back to the Future idea that someone would have the human genome. There'd be one person that'd have one human genome and this is the DNA sequencing, and they'd discover blue LEDs in years. So I hope to be alive to see a blue LED. So it's a total shock and total spontaneous cry that there's a blue LED. Now, of course, the blue LED is supremely significant in terms of data communication, illumination, all these types of things. And in fact, our world now, all around us, they're ripping out incandescent lights and putting in blue LEDs, which hit a phosphorus and make a chilling white light. And so I'm always now observing LEDs down our street, one by one, as the old vapor lamps go. They replace it with a. Initially, it was a fairly chilling LED lamp in terms of that you'd get multiple shadows, but they've cleaned that up. And initially, you'd be able to see some sort of visual effects with the early LED lamps. But it really has changed our world. Going into the city around Sydney Central Station, there'd be a few dingy places, but now the place is computer illuminated with really crisp, clear LEDs. It's not daytime, but it's not the dingy nighttime that was before. The world has definitely changed. And yeah, the blue LEDs. Now, the Nobel Prize aspect in 2014, finally gave the Nobel Prize to the three people who discovered how to make blue LEDs. And I think it's indium gallium nitrogen. There's a nitrogen in there, and it's actually not grown as a crystal, but I think it's blown on top. These are things, and I've heard various stories of chance discoveries this as you got into it, but now all the detail has sort of glossed over. I have to go back and read it. But at the time, it was so exciting. And then 2014, when I heard the Nobel Prize for the blue LED, that concluded the world of the blue LED. And of course, one of the things I've learnt is that my children and everybody else are just not as excited about the light-emitting diode. But what a fantastic thing it is. A solid-state piece of solid-state stuff, which doesn't do electrical switching or do all the things that it's so good at. It's sort of acting as a valve, microscopic valve. It also, just to top it off, it can actually just emit light from its junction. We'll talk about the junction a little bit into the history of it. So that concludes my sort of what's still going on. I'm still amazed when I go online and you can get an ultraviolet LED laser, just or the entire lasers, everything you can do with LEDs is, and the organic LEDs, and you go into your electronics sort of mega mart, and you see these huge TVs with very deep, deep, deep black screens and intense reds, because they're using organic LEDs, which have got a very small size, so they can pack a lot of black, inky black around them. So when they're off, it looks very, very intense black and very intense color. Sort of almost hyper, or it is obviously hyper real. I'm looking out at them. And so that's my LED experience. And in one of these things that if you're into it, you have a life experience, and if you're really dependent on approval from others, or you can switch it off. This switch off your intense enjoyment of it. There's other effects which I get really excited about. But my first experience of an LED was in 1975 in America, because although they might have been coming out in Australia by then. It was the electronics junk workshop at the local place, and these people came out, and they looked at the bottom of the junk box, and they said, "Hey, an LED." I said, "Oh, what's an LED?" And they said, "Oh, it's a special diode. It only transmits energy in one direction." I knew about it then. I think it was 12. I knew about diodes and how they operated, but And the idea was curious. Oh, it operates as a diode, and they hooked it one way. It didn't work. It had high resistance, of course. And then hooked the other way, and then the diode actually lit up, and it was just, whoa, that's just an amazing thing to see. Because so you can imagine a world of where people knew about, or like I, as a small kid, knew about diodes, and suddenly see it glow. It didn't glow intensely bright back then, but I think the US had, since the late 60s, been able to produce mass produce these cheap LEDs, but you didn't see it till then. And then a few years later, at school, people had LED watches where you could actually press the button and it would actually illuminate the time of your LED, the LED date. Obviously, your watch would run very flat. I'm just trying to think, 75. Oh yeah, and so was it 75? Yeah. Oh yeah. So later on, we that year we bought Texas Instruments TI-71 and TI-71. I can't remember what the other TI was. A big programmable beast with a paper tape on the paper, thermal paper, which would print the lines and basic coming out. Always great fun. I think that was an amazing calculator because that calculator clipped into the back of this little white unit with a printer, and there was a key on it. I can still remember there was some sort of key to turn it on. It was a pretty amazing beast, but they had LEDs. So that was my first experience of LEDs, and when it turned on, I couldn't believe it. I touched it and it was cold. And this is one of the things with LED lights is that they're cold. And so, bit by bit, or at the time of the Christmas concert, I said, "Oh, look, you don't understand. Understand, this was first discovered by someone in 1920." And I'll tell you the story as people have retold it to me, so they've embellished the story. And some of it is true. So the scientist, they've got the name. I said Oleg Losev in 1920, and this is the embellished story. And it's not, when I retell it, you'll kind of realize that some of it's not too embellished. But they said he was a Russian scientist in 1920. Was looking down a microscope and at a crystal hit with a wire, and he had a little pin needle on a, and it's hitting this little crystal, and it glowed, and he realized that he's seen a new form of light, and he burst into tears and cried and explained to everyone that he'd made a great discovery, but no one believed him. That's the story as retold by my kids. But the actual story is not too far from it. He would have looked down a microscope to look at it. He did realize it was a big discovery. Whether he burst into tears and cried and all the emotional stuff I did when I saw an LED is that's not necessarily true. But it is true that no one really believed him or took it all that seriously. Although he did develop the LED as a write papers about its potential for illumination, and he did write to Einstein at the time and saying, "Look, this LED stuff is to do with the quantum mechanics that you have begun to talk about." So let's look at 1920. Oh, 1905, you have the photoelectric effect. So 1905, 15 years later, someone sees something which is obviously the inverse photoelectric effect. You put in electrons and out comes light. And it's a cold type of light in terms of that he looked at it and issued some I think benzene and put solvent on it and it still glowed as strong. So if it was a thermal type of light, it would blue on it. This is why I love the blowing on coils of nichrome wire and seeing it dim as you blow on it. The heat disappears. So he blew on it and put solvents on it. It glowed just as strongly. And indeed, I think it was in a first year university lecture. Now just remember that the LEDs are not as good back even in the 90s as the LEDs have just gone from strength to strength. In fact, LEDs are increasing at brightness, I think every 36 months, they're doubling in brightness. LEDs are also following this economist's view of computer power and light power. LEDs are doubling in brightness, potential brightness, every 18 months, apparently. But so back then, LEDs were not as bright, and it's sort of really hard to think back. I'm sure that most people are not as light sensitive, so I look at the different colours and the illuminations at different periods of history, and I really remember it. But back in the 80s, the early 80s, when I was doing my degree, I remember Professor Opat put an LED in liquid nitrogen, and it glowed incredibly bright. So if you cool down an LED, it glows more brightly. This Losev. So the actual real story was that he was upper class, Bolshevik revolution, got into a lot of the structure of Russian science was swept aside or switched off because it mimicked the old regime. So he was successfully able to study LEDs, and he had a okay, let's see. So let's go through the sequence of things. In terms of the first, you have a radio. A radio has a radio wave, which you can pick up and amplify and make largely large. And so a radio wave's AC. So you need a diode, which basically is a natural diode, not as well. All diodes are semiconductor. All crystal radios were semiconductor, but you have a crystal, and a crystal has a form that it releases current in one direction, and so it just takes all the up excursions and averages it, and so you lose the high frequency and you get the low frequency envelope, which is the sound. So you can convert a radio wave into sound with electricity, with a crystal. A crystal is a naturally occurring semiconductor. Going for a while here, is a naturally occurring semiconductor. So the first crystal radios, and I don't know, in the 30s, my father made a, you could buy crystal radio sets, and the way he hooked up an earphone to the Hills Hoist, the clothesline. We have a sort of clothesline which looks like a radio mask out here in Australia. And he hooked it up through a crystal set. And it's very simple, just a wire, pick up a crystal and a speaker, and you can pick up a tuner that you can pick up any radio station. And the way that the crystal, so with that, my grandmother said, "Well, what are you doing?" And she went up, and she was absolutely amazed as she could actually listen to music, as far as she was concerned, coming from her clothesline. But getting back to it, how you do it, you have a crystal, you hold the crystal. It's generally this usually a soft material underneath it, conductive material, and you have a needle, and you point the needle with screws, and you point it over the top. That entire idea of a needle going down into a surface to find a junction, that is where the crystals move one way than the other. I'm not going to describe it too much. This is such an idea as a junction. When you find the junction, you get, and you're listening all the time. And so what's happening is you set up your radio and you move your pin across this crystal. The pin is the right point, just the right point. You suddenly hear sound. It's this fantastic thing. And of course, nowadays we don't have crystal. I suppose you can buy crystal radio. I don't think it would make sense. But the idea of this needle going onto a flat surface is the modern picture of a diode. The diode, a needle going into crystal producing light. So there's a line with a triangle going up, and then light rays coming out. That's the symbol for an LED. That's your symbol for an LED. That's what the symbol is nowadays. Still from the ancient time. Now, just quickly go through The Russians and radios absolutely got completely whipped in World War One at this Tannenberg. And essentially, the Germans gave the Russians radios, and the Russians really didn't understand. They thought radios are great how they worked, and of course, they spoke clear, clear on the radio. And essentially, the Russians didn't work out that the Germans were listening, and so they just rocked up, and the Germans absolutely slaughtered the Russians at Tannenberg. You know this story very much. If you're a signaller in the army, they tell you this story about everything you say is being listened to, and so you have to be very precise and short form. So there's great research into this. I don't think they may have had started to have tubes in World War One. Definitely tubes was the version of it. So they had basically. So fantastic. The Oleg Lasev, this Russian dude, basically stumbled across quantum mechanics, a quantum mechanical effect, and an application and a correct explanation that there was not classical physics going on. So he didn't have the full quantum physics, but he had the idea of a gap and inverse photoelectric effect, all this fantastic stuff in a sudden flash. Now, he wasn't, in fact, the very first person to see this effect, but he's the first person to write about it and note it more than an unusual thing. So, just going back to radios, you've got crystal radios, then you've got vacuum tube radios where everything's built up like a physics diagram, sort of like a physics diagram in a bell jar. And then you have the transistor radios, and then you've got integrated circuit radios. So even nowadays, if I say, how's that transistor radio? Or if you say tranny, no one, some of the older people know what you're talking about. The younger people will say, what does a tranny mean? I don't understand. So you've got those generations of producing radios and solid state physics coming in. So Oleg's story was that it wasn't necessarily, it didn't seem a very happy time in Russia. And due to various purges and stuff, he was taken off radio research. So the Russians really needed to develop radio research, and he developed sort of way ahead of solid state valves. So a diode's a valve which operates in way. So he developed that way ahead, and then a few years before. World War II, he was transferred to St. Petersburg or Leningrad to work in a medical institute. And when the Germans surrounded Leningrad and basically sieged it, soldiers were the first people to get the food, and civilians were second. So lots and lots of civilians starved to death. And so this poor chance person, the Einstein didn't believe, but who discovered everything, and not that he didn't believe, he's just a Russian technician writing to him. It doesn't rate to people from Cambridge and all these famous people writing to him. Who knows exactly why, but wasn't acknowledged. And indeed, this, I think it was called Lasev Light, after him. This was really buried for way up into the 50s and 60s. So it was his. So unfortunately, he starved to death in Leningrad, which is rather a sad story. Now, he used a semiconductor of silicon's a semiconductor, carbon's a semiconductor. Definitions taught at school are a bit skew whiff. I don't know how they arrive at them, but he had a silicon carbide with a needle. Called cat's whiskers needles. It's a piece of wire which it actually bends, and it's actually curves and hits the wire. And a diode symbol is the a sort of a schematic picture of this setup. And so when he pressed it against, he saw a small green glow. And apparently it's hard to actually replicate that exactly in the lab. Like many of these first results, say like radio waves, Hertz radio waves, very hard to replicate, particularly when people simplify the explanation and you lose some key key information. So we've got, in similar to a resistor which emits light to show it's carrying current and showing it's got temperature, an LED is a fantastic device to actually give to kids and let them play with it, and then they work out for themselves that it produces light in only one direction. So when the current actually does flow, light flows. So it's something which tells you how much current is flowing through it due to light. And if you set them up to measure the eye characteristics, eye at certain voltages, characteristics, you can get them to set up to look at diodes now. And especially if you can actually get them understanding that if you reduce the resistance, you can increase the current through it. So in the glow and blow, if you blow on it, the actual current increases as it cools down. As it cools down, the resistivity drops. So that's a very important thing because this happens with diodes. And we'll have a quick chat about the two aspects which happen with diodes. Diodes have a P and an N junction. And so there's P is hole carriers, N is electron carriers. Won't go into it too much detail, but if you have the junction and you have it at the P is positive and the N is taking it to the negative, the actual positive holes will be pushed across into the negative region. So what happens is that you have too many holes on one side and too many electrons on the other side, and in the middle you have it just right. And so what happens is it's a semiconductor on the left, it becomes a pure semiconductor or an insulator in the center, and again another semiconductor on the right. So the conductivity of the center region is called the depletion region. This is where holes and electrons pour in from either side of the silicon, creating neutral, purified or balanced silicon. And that size of balanced is in equilibrium. There's an equilibrium number of seen an animal run past here. Sorry, an equal number of holes and electrons. It's neutral. It's actually a good insulator. And so what happens is that you can actually grow the size of your resistor. So a diode is something which the electric field can either shrink the resistor, and so the electric field goes up to a certain point and it shrinks the resistor till it's nothing. Go the opposite way, where it actually starts to pull holes and electrons out of this region. This region, this neutralized region, will increase in size. And so your depletion layer is a movable feast. So it physically grow from nothing to a larger and larger size in your depletion layer. This is the region of between the two P and N, which is so a region between two P a surface between P and N types of semiconductor is called a junction. So your junction thickness can change with electric field. And so your so what's called the band gap distance is where your is a voltage forward bias of your voltage at which current begins to flow. So with a diode, if you've got a small 0.1, 0.2 volts, depending on what the diode is, for a photodiode, it's 1 or 1 volt or 0.9, and then it goes way up, I think, to 4.2 volts for a UV diode. And we're beginning to give away a bit of the secrets and the amazingness of it. So if you plot the characteristics for different types of light diodes, when you see you'll slowly increase the voltage, nothing will happen, no current, and then the current will go and it'll begin to glow. And it's this intense learning experience. And plot for different colored diodes. Blue diodes will require a greater voltage to increase. Now, what you can do is with a Zener diode, you apply a reverse Xenodiode, it's the shape of a diode, but the flat cross is got a little uptick. Get up to the level and uptick per game. So it's actually a Z of a Zener diode. It's got the little Z drawn in there. And this is a special diode where what it's made out of very heavily doped silicon and PN silicon, very heavily silicon dope. So the actual depletion layer in the center still grows and quite intense, but it's reverse bias, it's grows to a limited amount. So when you reverse bias, the size of the depletion layer increases, and it still grows to a peak layer, but the electric field, it's not as thick as a weakly doped diode. So Zener diode is simply a very strongly doped and selected and engineered diode. It's very strongly doped, and it means that you can create a very intense electric field. And you would say, well, how is this an intense electric field? Well, if the diode, the depletion layer is only 1 micron across, 1 volt reverse is 1,000,000 volts per meter. It's a very strong electric field which is holding off. And at this time, you get an effect called quantum mechanical tunneling. Isn't that fantastic, everybody? So if you reverse bias a Zener diode, you get a sort of another sudden increase in current. It becomes a very good conductor at a reverse bias. And so this is another feature. So you've got all these different features, different curves of different colors, and this is something to plot and understand and discover. Just by plotting and working out what's going on, if they can work it out. And then you have another feature. So it's just the feature of letting them explore LEDs, and then this I versus B versus I graph to see what goes on, and actually observe current and light, the combination for there. And well, when the current goes through the LED, it is a one, each coulomb through does require so many joules, which comes out. It's pretty efficient transmission to light. One of the things that you can do is it, and I can't guarantee it because I've only done it with one. You can start off with a greenish diode. Green, they're still very cheap. How much they can charge you for diodes, it's more all in handling, not in the actual cost of diodes. Now, if you get a green diode and drive it above its rated current by 10-20% or more for a period of time, what will happen is that it will change color as it's beginning to die. So you've got to kill it very, very slowly. Begin to change color and go from green to yellow to orange to red. This one diode. So this is something I've observed many times, and obviously I can't guarantee it, because essentially you've got to have the same semiconductor work in different conditions. So I don't have the scientific analysis to back up why this necessarily works. So I say advise to do it. And this is where you drive the diode above its current limit. And this is a very impressive thing that you someone's imagination, the idea of a band gap and degradation of this band gap. I suppose what I'm going to do is conclude by sort of mentioning something else which I described before, is a dreadful confusion between E to describe the band gap from left to right, as the current travels through a device. So the band gap is obviously changing. Nature of the band gap is changing from the E to through the depletion zone to the next aspect of it. But what's almost impossible to explain is the idea of direct and indirect band. Something that I've YouTube on, and that requires a little bit of thought and explanation, a few steps, which I've very rarely seen explained properly. But the important thing is that Lasseev, Oleg Lasseev, dealing with a something which really shouldn't have produced very much light whatsoever. So it's incredibly inefficient. This is silicon carbide or chromium. It's got an indirect band gap. What you want, an indirect band gap, you're just very lucky that things that the electrons can actually move over the top of holes. That's what a direct band gap is, where the electron is in terms of just trying to think, in terms of momentum, space is directly across a hole, and that's the entire nature of LEDs. So I've talked a while about LEDs. I hope it's interesting. I was trying to aim for a slightly different type of podcast, where I related to personal excitement, a bit more excitement into it. But then I got into the boring depths of how you actually teach the stuff. And I suppose this is our task, is to actually, rather than just be with the students and get the high points, is actually really understand the deep stuff, and actually just create sort of stepping stones of experience and learning experiences, where we've got the sort of the deep ocean of experience to support that. So what can I say? The other thing is having a sort of deep experience actually means that you have a more intense experience of the simple things like LEDs. I hope that you can introduce LEDs into your classroom and produce I versus V curves for it, and explore different color LEDs, and explore the Zener diode. It's a very worthwhile thing. And finally, if you can sacrifice a green LED and just usher it out of existence very slowly, and you'll see it change color. A really fantastic experience. Thanks for listening. In the meantime, keep on thinking about science, doing science, and ultimately teaching science.